is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. This January, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball introduced their all-new CT Plus machine with a 21.5-inch touchscreen that allows players to train offline, build custom drills, compete in multiplayer mode, and view their stats in real time. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on their Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Mijai Raducanu from Gannon Baker Basketball, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, and we are coming on a little bit disgruntled after.
I can't wait
tonight's.
Can't wait to see the last 2 minute report tomorrow.
I mean, by the letter of the law, I guess the first call on LeVert maybe is
How about the call before that, Mike?
Which call before that?
The one where the ball was, they called it out of bounds on the Cav and it didn't look like it touched a Cavalier.
Well, that one nobody really talked about it. I didn't really see it on replay. Initially when it went out of bounds, I didn't think anybody touched it, but nobody seemed to make a big deal out of it, at least in terms of the announcing team. So, and the Cavs didn't seem that upset about it. Nobody was immediately throwing their finger up in the air and whirling it around. So I'm assuming that at some point somebody touched it, but man, that the call, I know the idea of trying to protect guys. And you think back to when Zaza Pachulia went under Kawhi and whatever that was, 2017, when the Spurs were killing the Warriors in game one of the Western Conference. I forget, was that the semis or the finals? I think it was the finals. And
yeah,
Kawhi goes out. So I get the spirit of the rule, but man, when you're closing out, you're playing hard defense and the guy's jumping forward and you're coming towards him.
I mean, he also jumped like
shot.
4 feet forward. I mean, Jesus.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, you don't want guys landing on other guys' feet, but that's just backbreaking. So for people who weren't watching the game, Cavs were up, I believe, 5 at the time. They call LeVert for a flagrant foul. Ball goes in. Clarkson gets 2 to make 1, makes the free throw, then gets fouled in the next play, which was, I guess it looked worse in the initial move. Like, I really thought Clarkson, when I watched it live, jumped back into him. He really didn't that much, but again, he definitely sold the call. But the Jazz get a 7-point play and go from down 5 to up 2, and then they close it out on the Cavs tonight. Disappointing loss for the Cavaliers, without question,
especially with Mitchell Goodrum, 45. No, yeah. 46, I should say, sorry.
Coming up big again in another big spot, going back to Utah. But this was a game that the Cavs needed for sure. They dropped the 5th. They're tied with Philly, but they're percentage points behind. So they've dropped the 5th now in the Eastern Conference. And as we talked about last week, as I'm sure we're going to talk about again tonight, they got a really tough stretch of games coming up. And I think this would have been a good one to get. You got 2 out of the last 3, which we talked about on the pod last week. They beat Phoenix twice, threw away the Denver game by sitting Mitchell. I think they kind of looked at that one as a schedule loss. And so you wanted to come back in and get this one and then get Portland, and the stretch gets a little bit harder from there. So this would have been a good one to put in your back pocket heading into the schedule that they're coming up against here in a little bit. So we'll talk about that. But yeah, disappointing loss. I, I'm kind of salty about the whole thing because, just again, it looked like where they had battled back and were right there to put it away. And, man, it all slipped away in the matter of, like, one possession, basically.
Well, I know this, you're salty, but I'm just going to go into my normal win share. I picked the Jazz tonight before this collapse happened. So I have the Jazz win shares pulled up, Mike.
All right.
You should be able to get two of them pretty easily.
Are we going back to the New Orleans Jazz?
I'm going to tell you... it might include someone from the New Orleans Jazz.
Okay. Stockton and Malone.
Yes.
Mark Eaton
is not on the list.
He's not on the list at all.
He's 11.
Okay, at least he's on the list. That's good. Jeff Hornacek?
He's number 6.
Ooh, just off the list. Pete Maravich?
Pete Maravich is not on the list at all.
All right. Utah Jazz. Man. Donovan Mitchell?
He's not on the list at all.
Rudy Gobert?
He's number 3.
Wow. All right, so I've got 3 of the top 5, and I still need more. Man. I'm trying to think who it could even be.
Yo. I'm doing my best Sylvester Stallone impression. Yo.
That's not helping me.
It's Rocky? Rocky? Yo.
I mean, I know it's Rocky, but I'm not sure who I'm supposed to be guessing.
Adrian Dantley.
Here you go. Dantley.
Come on, Mike.
Oh my gosh.
Last one. He had a nickname that he would not be allowed to have nowadays because of our gun problem.
I don't know. I have nothing.
Andre Kirilenko.
All right, AK-47. All right.
There you go.
All right. Wow. Okay. My Utah Jazz knowledge is lacking tonight.
Derek Favors was 7. Paul Millsap is 8. Deron Williams is 9. Mehmet Okor. Yes. Okay. Mehmet Okor is 10. And number 12, you forgot about Gordon Hayward, Mike.
Yeah, that would have been a good one to get.
But anyways, I just...
All right, well... I'm just mad at Utah. I don't even want to think about the Utah Jazz.
That's fair, Mike. It's a completely fair problem.
Should have just guessed Jordan Clarkson.
Dude, he was on a heater tonight. He was on a heater tonight.
John Michael, the Cavs announcer, did say at one point, Jordan Clarkson, he really wants to shoot.
Did you text your daughter?
No, she's already asleep, but yeah, that was...
Man, she's living it up, that college life, man.
You go to bed, and then you get up at, like, noon. She's doing well, man, for her little break, so no complaints from her.
She's still on break?
Yeah, she's still on break. She goes back Sunday, so...
Oh, okay. I thought maybe she was back at school.
Well, these normal college students, they get, like, a month off. I had no idea what that was like. I was trying to explain to my wife that, you know, I had, like... maybe like 24 hours off when I was playing. I'm like, yeah, most times we practiced on Christmas night when I was playing. And when I was a freshman and sophomore, we had to move out of the dorm into this ratty hotel, the Inn of Kent, that doesn't exist anymore.
And then What was it called, Mike?
The Inn of Kent.
The Inn of Kent.
Yeah.
Sounds very,
yeah, it sounds, it looked and felt exactly like it sounds. Trust me.
It sounds very, high class.
Yeah, it was a motel. How about that? It was a motel. So it was not the nicest place I've ever stayed in my life. Let's put it that way. Even as a college student, I knew it wasn't nice. So that'll tell you something.
Yeah, college students have low standards, Mike.
Yes, my standards were probably pretty low, and I thought that place was a dump. So there you go.
There you go, indeed.
nobody will be offended because it doesn't exist anymore. So it was great to come back from 2-a-days and then just sit on your bed all day. No couch. Or you could sit, I guess, in an office chair. I'm sure we had an office chair.
Was it one of those ones, the like swirly ones, or?
I'm sure it wasn't. No, I'm sure it was not. I'm questioning whether it even had padding or not. Who knows?
Oh, Mike, that's good,
good
stuff.
Good times, baby. Good times.
Good times indeed. All right. So the question that I have for you, Mike, where the like, are you upset? Like, I know you're salty about this Cavs loss, like. How mad are you about this Cavs? Like, is this lower your thoughts on the Cavs, or does that not?
No, this is exactly. I feel exactly the way I did after the Clippers game on that first road trip on the Western Conference, where honestly the Cavs were up 5 tonight, and I had two thoughts run through my head. One is, it seems like every time the Cavs need Mitchell in a big moment, he's been there for every big moment, at least when he's been on the floor and hasn't been resting. Like, I can't think of a single time this year where it was a big game or they really needed him or it was a bounce back or it was somebody that had beaten them where he hasn't played well. Now, they may have lost some of those games, but Mitchell has come to play every single time. So that was a thought that was going through my head when the Cavs were up 107-102. And then the other thing that was going through my head is the 2 or 3 possessions before the 7-point possession, Mobley was just ridiculous on defense.
Yeah.
He was everywhere. Blocked a shot, deflections. He switched on to, I think it was Clarkson, but it may have been Conley. And whoever it was, whichever one of those two guys it was, just tried to go by him. And Mobley just moved his feet and totally stonewalled him. And that was my other thought was, man, Mobley is just so good defensively. And look, he still leaves me wanting a little bit on offense. I think part of his problem is Mitchell and Garland are just so good scoring the ball that why are we going to give possessions to Evan Mobley? But Mobley's defense is just phenomenal. But that's kind of where I'm at with this loss tonight and sort of with the team in general is I feel like that Clippers loss sort of spiraled us into a couple more losses. And it really felt like at that point, before they fell apart in the last 3 or 4 minutes of that Clippers game, I was like, man, this team is really clicking on all cylinders, and it felt like they were right there where you want them to be. And tonight, I don't know if I felt quite the same way because I don't think they were playing quite as well in the totality of this game. They obviously were down 11, 12, 13, something like that in the third quarter and had to claw their way back. But the team doesn't quit. I think when you look at it, I think the big question that we're asking ourselves, and I think it's kind of what you're getting at, is where do I see them in terms of their ability to eventually advance in the playoffs, right? I mean, that's ultimately what we're talking about. Because I think, as we established last week, I find it hard to believe that any of these 5 teams at the top of the East, now granted, if KD is gone for longer than they expect, I don't expect Brooklyn to be there, and who knows what's going to happen with Brooklyn. But the best version of Brooklyn we know is one of the top 5 teams in the Eastern Conference. So I think that 5 that are at the top of the East right now, Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly, and the Cavs, I think they're going to be there in some order. I think those will be the top 5 teams. I'll be surprised if anybody else is able to crack that top 5. So that being said, I think the question becomes, how legitimate is this Cavs team to be able to, let's say, win a second round series, right? Because I think most of us are going to expect that they're going to win their first round series. Now, if they end up in the 4-5, obviously, that's going to be a really difficult series. And could the Cavaliers lose that series? Certainly. I think the question is, can they get past the second round? And I think the answer to that is yes. I don't think it would be easy. But I think the two things that give me confidence that the Cavs would have a shot at that is, one, I think Mitchell can go toe-to-toe with any other guy night for night. He could be the best player on the floor for a night, 2 nights, 3 nights in any of those series. Now, granted, you're talking about going against Embiid. You're talking about going against Tatum. You're talking about going against Giannis. You're talking about going against KD or Kyrie, whatever. But Mitchell, at least at this, in this season, at this point, this iteration of what Donovan Mitchell is, at least from a scoring standpoint. Now, he has a disadvantage because of his size, but he's so physical and his shot making is so good that, and he's done it in the playoffs before. I mean, he had the duel with Jamal Murray where he scored multiple 50-point games. So he's done it on the biggest stage. So I feel good about that piece of the Cavs. And then the second thing that gives me some confidence is just the fact that this team is really hard to score on. And Mobley and Allen just bring a presence in two big guys that both can move their feet, that both can wall off the paint, they both can block shots. They're both defensive-oriented players. That gives me some confidence that the Cavs aren't going to just give up suddenly 140 points in the playoffs. I just don't think that's going to happen. So I have some level of confidence. Now, do I think that they're likely to win a second-round series and make the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think we're quite to that point. But could we? We certainly could. I mean, I think we could play with any of these teams, and given a break by an injury or a lucky bounce or somewhere where you win a game or maybe you're not supposed to. I mean, I would feel pretty good about us playing Philly, right?
Yeah.
I would feel pretty good. I mean, I think when you can throw Allen at Embiid and you got Mobley, I would feel pretty good about playing against Philadelphia. Milwaukee, I'd be a little nervous if Milwaukee's at full strength. Obviously, I've picked them to win the title. So I think Milwaukee at their best is clearly better than the Cavs. But who knows, right? I mean, yeah. Mitchell with Middleton being out pretty much this entire season and not being able to get back healthy on the floor. And then they've been dealing with a lot of other stuff. Drew Holiday's been sick a lot this season for whatever reason. We'll see. Full strength Milwaukee, I think, clearly is better than the Cavs, but who knows whether you get that. Brooklyn, we've said it a million times. Are you confident that Brooklyn is going to look like the Brooklyn of this 12-game winning streak come playoff time?
Well,
is that
especially with KD's injury. I mean,
right. And Kyrie's uncertainness, wonkiness, whatever you want to call it. I wouldn't feel that bad about our chances matching up with Brooklyn. Obviously, we've beaten Boston twice, so I don't think I'd go into any series going, oh man, we have no chance if we're at full strength.
Yep.
That's how I feel. So I don't think we're a favorite out of those five teams to make the Eastern Conference Finals, but I do feel like in any one of those series, there would be a pathway for the Cavaliers to win, except maybe Milwaukee at full strength. I think Milwaukee at full strength we'd have a really hard time with because I'm not sure that nobody can deal with Giannis, so I'm not sure the Cavs can.
Makes sense. I agree with you. I think still Milwaukee's the only team in the East that I'm like really afraid of. I think,
and only Milwaukee at full strength. If Milwaukee is in any way diminished, if one of their, well, obviously if Giannis is out, it's a whole different story. But if either Drew Holiday or Middleton are somehow compromised, injured, not playing at their best, I think suddenly Milwaukee becomes more defendable because you just throw more guys at Giannis and you're just then at that point daring other guys to beat you and hoping that Giannis doesn't go for 50 and 20 every game.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I just think that's really the only team I'm really, what I want to say, I don't know if afraid is the word, but that's the only team I'm really afraid of is Milwaukee. So, anyone else, I think they can compete. And I will say, like we talked about with the Durant situation, like who knows how long he's going to be out. They said he could get reevaluated in 2 weeks, but it's the same injury that he had. Like,
yeah, he's had it two other times, so this is the third time.
Yeah. So, like, do I really want to put all my eggs in that basket if I'm, you know, the Bucks? I don't know. That's, or not the Bucks, the Nets. I don't know. Like you said, Kyrie too. He's just been so wonky, and he's been playing pretty well. But at the same time, like, how long is that truly going to last, right?
Yeah, and Brooklyn's been playing and shooting unbelievably well. I mean, unbelievably well. And their schedule's been kind of light, and I think that if they regress to the mean at all, just in terms of their shooting, which you got to think you take Durant, a historically great mid-range shooter out of the lineup, you're thinking that some of those shots that are going to go to other people probably aren't going to be quite as effective. So I expect Brooklyn to fall down the standings. Now, again, does that mean they're going to go 1-9 in their next 10? Probably not, but could they drop down and go? The Cavs have gone 5-5 in the last 10, and they've went from, I think they were third, and now they're fifth. So if you go 5-5 and you're near the top of the conference in the East, at least you're going to drop Milwaukee's 4-6, and they were either 1 or 2 before they started this little 10 game sort of skid. So,
yeah.
And so I think Brooklyn is going to drop down those standings based on KD being out. And who knows, a month? Is that realistic? You bring them back. If you bring them back in a month, that's like 2 weeks before the All-Star break. Do you maybe just say, hey, we sit them until the All-Star break? Don't bring them back till after that, which would mean like, I think that's the end of February, like February 24th or 25th, something like that. So maybe he just sits with the idea of, hey, if we can play 500 basketball until he comes back, now we get him back and healthy rather than trying to push it and bring it back earlier. Who knows what Brooklyn does and who knows what the condition of his knee is, but I think they're going to be cautious because clearly you need him in the playoffs and seeding is important, but at the same time, you could be the number one seed. And if you don't have a full healthy Durant, it doesn't really make any difference. So I think Brooklyn will be cautious with that. And as a result, I think they'll probably fall down in the standings. And then you look at, like you said, those five teams to me are pretty solid. I don't see anybody below that that really I think is going to crack that top five. The only team that has a really, I would say, outside shot is Miami. I don't see the Pacers. I don't see the Knicks.
You see what they did tonight, Mike?
Yeah, 40 for 40 from the line. Crazy. NBA record. Jimmy Butler hit the last one, I guess. Hit the last one to wrap it up, 40 for 40. I didn't see what the previous record was for most makes without a miss. So, like, I don't know if it was 39 or if it was close. I was looking. Let's see here. I got the article. Let's see if the, what the previous. Miami topped the 39 for 39 effort by Utah against Portland on December 7th, 1982. So that record's been long-standing. 40 years. Pretty good, 40 for 40. That's pretty impressive.
That just a little bit impressive, just a little bit.
Obviously, a team making all their free throws. I wonder how often that happens in a season.
I don't know. That's a good question. The Cavs actually have been shooting free throws pretty good, Mike.
They're a good free throw shooting team. I mean, you figure who's taking most of their free throws, right? Yeah, Mitchell and Garland. So those two guys are both good free throw shooters.
Well, Austin Carr was going on some tangent about how they got to be better free throw shooters, and they were shooting 89%. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Austin?
Hey, Jimmy Butler was 23 for 23 tonight.
I guess
second most without a miss in NBA history.
James Harden?
Yes, James Harden. And then we had two guys who. Let's see. Nowitzki made 24 without a miss in a playoff game. And Dominique went 23 for 23 in a game in 1992. I don't think of Dominique as being a great free throw shooter.
I was literally just going to say the same thing.
I think he was good, though. I think he's better than my perception of him. I don't think of him as a great jump shooter. He didn't have beautiful form. But as I think back, I'm pretty sure he was a good free throw shooter. Like, I think he shot in the high 70s, low 80s for most of his career. I think. I could be wrong, but I think. So, yeah, 23 for 23 for Dominique and 23 for 23 for Jimmy Butler tonight to add to the Heat's 40 for 40. Impressive night for Miami.
Yep. All right, so let's predict the Cavs' next few games, and then we'll whip around the league a little bit and
all right,
go from there. So Cavs play the Trailblazers tomorrow. That's a win, right?
Coming off tonight, I think that's got to be – I think you got to think of that as a win. And yeah, I think you got to think of that as a win.
Okay. All right. Saturday night at the Timberwolves.
You got to win that game. Come on.
Okay. I don't disagree. I think they got to win that one too. And then Monday, Zion's in town, Mike.
But he's not in town.
I know, because he's not playing. I know. Oh, shucks.
A lot of people who bought tickets to see Zion.
Now they don't get to see him.
It's like when Luka
came here.
Yeah. I know we talked about it before, but Zion's legitimately hurt, but you can't have guys from cross conferences sitting out games in the other conference. That's a really bad look for the league, and it's really disappointing for fans when a guy only comes to town once a year and he sits out to rest. To me, you have to rest your home games. And I know teams can get around it and make up stuff, but still, it stinks if you're a fan of a particular player and you go out and buy tickets, spend a lot of money to try to get those tickets, and then the guy doesn't play. That's disappointing.
Fair assessment. I mean, my favorite quote was when they were talking about all the players that were like hurt, and Austin Carr talked about how ankle soreness, give me a break. Like, they should be out there playing. And I was like, that's right, Austin Carr. You tell them
that. Old school. Old school, baby. Old school.
Yeah, for sure. So, anyways. All right, so that's the Cavs.
You got to win the two at Portland, at Minnesota. Two teams that are well below you record-wise. And, look, this team hasn't been good on the road. I think that's the one worrisome thing about this whole entire loss in Utah, the loss to the Clippers. It just feels like they're just not the same team. I don't know if they feed off the energy of the crowd, what it is, but they just don't play as well. And obviously nobody plays as well on the road as they do at home. But I'd like to see them get these two games, come home, beat New Orleans without Zion and Ingram. That's a game you should win. And then you got a tough three-game stretch with Memphis, Golden State, and Milwaukee. That's why I really wanted to see them put this Utah game in their back pocket and put it in the win column, because I think Portland, Minnesota, New Orleans, those are three winnable games. But then you got Memphis, Golden State, Milwaukee. And so the schedule, as we talked about earlier, it gets a little bit harder here for the rest of January and then on into the beginning of February when it starts to soften up. So tough loss for the Cavs, and it is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it, but it felt eerily reminiscent to me of that Clippers game and that first West Coast road trip where it looked like they were going to get a big victory, and boom, it just got taken away in this case. Taken away by a 7-point possession, which you don't see every day.
Yeah, stolen away, Mike.
There you go. There you go.
Someone on Twitter said that the Cavs have, now that the Browns season has taken over, we're gonna see the Cavs we're gonna see the Cavs get screwed by the officials.
By the letter of the law, I guess you can't really argue with the LeVert going underneath Clarkson call, but I just don't like the rule. I think if you're playing hard defense, I think that's just something that happens, especially when guys are leaping forward as they're taking their three like Clarkson did. So whatever. It is what it is.
It is what it is. I agree. All right. So the last thing we want to talk about Eastern Conference really quickly is the Raptors. There's been lots of talk of them dismantling, taking apart their team because they are not doing well. Currently, they stand at 18-23. In the conference, and that's after winning two straight games. They're only a game behind Chicago, so they're right there. But the question is it worth for the Raptors, is it worth it for them to stick it out, or should they make a move? And like, honestly, Mike, my opinion is this. It comes down to two things. What are the Raptors willing to get rid of, and what are they willing to take for those things that they're willing to get rid of? Because Van Vliet is not performing at a super high level this year, right? He's down. Would you agree with that?
He's shooting 37% from the floor.
Okay, and he's up for a contract this year too, right? So that doesn't scream lots of excitement. Siakam's been pretty good, right?
Siakam's been great. He's leading him in points, rebounds, assists.
I wouldn't think they're willing to trade him.
Well, see, here's the thing. I think if you're Toronto, you have to look at it. And this is where I get confused with this whole Toronto discussion. Because on the one hand, you look at Toronto, and Siakam, I think, is 29 years old, if I'm not mistaken. So you have him. You have Anunoby, young player. You have Scottie Barnes, young player. You have Van Vliet, who feels like he's been around for a long time, but he's still in his late 20s. And he's proven himself on the biggest stage that he's come through in that 2019 finals and played well. So I obviously the guys that, and then you have Gary Trent who can shoot the ball. He's kind of the prototype of what a lot of other teams are looking for. My question is, if you're Toronto, are you tearing it down completely to build around Scotty Barnes? Like, can Scotty Barnes be the best player on a championship team? I don't know about your thoughts on that, but
no,
I don't think he has that kind of skill set. And I think he's good, and I think he could maybe be your second or third best player, but I don't think Scotty Barnes is your franchise centerpiece. I just don't see that. I don't think he shoots it well enough. And so you look at it and you say, Siakam's been he's been on the All-NBA team, I think, two out of the last 3 years or three out of the last four. I mean, the guy's 26, 8, and 7 right now, and he's 29 years old. So could you deal Siakam and probably get a pretty good package back for him? Sure, but are you likely to get a player who's going to produce and be as good of a player as Siakam? I'm not sure. Ananobi's a 6'8 dude who is probably going to make an all-defensive team, and he's a decent shooter, not a great shooter, but he averages like 18 a game. So he's 24 years old. Does Toronto readily want to get rid of a guy that everybody else in the league would be clamoring to get? Van Vliet, I don't know if his value could be any lower than it is right now. He's shooting, like I said, 37% from the field. And most teams already have a competent to good to great point guard. So it's not like his position is in extreme demand. You're obviously not trading Barnes. So I just don't know what direction they go if they're going to trade it. To me, if I'm Toronto, I try to work it out. I try to stick it out. I try to figure out what's going on with this team, the chemistry. Do they need more playmaking? Maybe they're a buyer. I don't know. It just feels like by trading it, are you resetting around Scotty Barnes? And if you are, to me, that just doesn't make sense. Because I think Siakam and Ananobi are guys in the right age bracket with the right skill set that a lot of teams would be interested in. But I'm not sure I want to tear it down and build around Scotty Barnes.
I agree. I mean, Scotty, listen, he won Rookie of the Year last year, Mike, right? Right,
yeah.
That guy? Yeah. I still take Evan Mobley over him. Sorry, Toronto.
Like, I agree with you.
I mean, he's not a number one on a championship team. Sorry. I just don't see it. So far I don't see it.
He doesn't shoot it well enough, and I don't think he's got kind of a funky shot. Like Mobley, you can kind of look and see that his shot looks like it could develop into something, whereas Scotty Barnes kind of has the push shot, and it just doesn't look like a guy who's ever going to be fluid shooting off the dribble and doing things that you need to be able to do if you're going to be a number one option on a championship team. And I don't see that. Now, does that mean that Siakam is the number one on a championship team? I don't know that I think that's the case either. But my point is that Siakam and Ananobi, these are guys that other teams, Gary Trent Jr., these are guys that other teams would clearly want, and they're not old. It's not like you're trading old guys and you're going to bring in guys who are younger. It's just these guys are already young, and they're guys that lots of other people in the league would want. So I think Toronto's going to probably stay the course, and I guess if they continue to flounder for the rest of the season and they miss the play-in, then maybe in the offseason you reevaluate and figure out what you're going to do. But I don't see them making an in-season move to tear it down. I could see him maybe even making a move to add something to this team if they sort of right the ship before the trade deadline.
All right. I mean, I don't disagree. My big thing is I just don't see what moves they can make that's going to bring anything of value to them. That's going to...
If you want to get worse, they could do that, right? I mean, if you want to get worse, if you want to trade Siakam and Ananobi and get picks and maybe get some players back, you can certainly do that, and you'd probably get some decent draft capital back, but I'm not sure what the point of doing that is. Are you really going to reset your whole franchise around Scotty Barnes? I just don't think you're going to reset your whole franchise around a 20-year-old guy
who I don't think ever is going to be the number one player on a championship team. So I wouldn't do it if I was Toronto.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
All right, so we were talking, Mike and I were talking about how we wanted to handle the Western Conference, and Mike had the idea to talk about the mediocrity that is the Western Conference, because they're all over the place. The Western Conference is all over the place. We don't know what we're going to get from a night-to-night basis. I think my favorite thing that happened tonight, Mike, I don't even know if you saw this, but that the Clippers were pressing Luka all the way up the floor the whole first half. Did you see that?
No, but that's a good strategy. I'm not surprised that somebody decided to do that.
I mean, wear him out, man.
Wear him out, make him give it to somebody else. Seems like a good strategy to me, especially with the Clippers who are so deep and they can play so many guys and just keep running guys in and out. That seems like, again, it's something that you don't always see in the regular season, but it's a strategy that I could definitely see teams throwing that kind of wrinkle at Dallas in the playoffs. Say, hey, how are you going to react to this? Luka, how are you going to react to this? Can other guys beat us? I don't know. Tonight, the answer obviously is no, because they're down by 16 right now.
Yeah, so just the Western Conference is a cavalcade of mediocrity. It's just teams different every night. You don't know what to expect. And, like, I guess you could say that NBA-wide a little bit, but it just seems to be more present in the Western Conference. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it just feels like none of these Western Conference teams are, I don't want to say they're not good, but you know how we were talking about if you were the Cavs, which teams would you be afraid of in the Eastern Conference? Or who would you look at and say, I don't know if I'd want to play those teams. We kind of said, pretty much we feel like the Cavs would have a decent chance against anybody except maybe a healthy Milwaukee. Now I go to the Western Conference and there's nobody in that Western Conference that I'd be afraid of that I don't think the Cavs could play with. We saw them play Denver, but obviously that was without Mitchell. Denver's good. Jokic is incredible. Denver's defense is, at best, mediocre. Memphis is good, but I still think that they're a little bit unproven. I think as good as Ja is, I think a guy that's that size, I think you can still do things to take the ball out of his hands, and then you're putting an awful lot on the plate of Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. in a playoff series. So those are the two teams that are at the top right now. I think those are probably the two best teams from a team-wide standpoint, but I'm not afraid of either of those teams. And if I'm other teams in the West, I don't think I'm afraid. I don't think I'm afraid to play Denver. I don't think I'm afraid to play Memphis if I'm one of these other teams. Now, those teams might be favored, but if I'm New Orleans or if I'm the Mavericks, I'm not going to Dallas or I'm not going into Memphis thinking, oh, there's no way we can beat the Grizzlies. Or, man, we can't figure out any way to attack Denver's defense. I don't think that's the case. And so then you look at the next four teams behind Denver and Memphis who are currently tied at 27-13. You have New Orleans, who I think, look, if New Orleans is healthy, huge, huge, huge if, because Ingram's been out for a while and Zion with the hamstring, who knows whether that thing lingers, how long he's going to have to sit out in order to get it to 100%, who knows. But the fully formed version of the Pelicans is a team that nobody's going to want to play. Nobody's going to be happy to be like, oh, great, we get to see the Pelicans. We get to try to guard Ingram and Valanciunas and Zion and CJ McCollum. Yeah, no thanks. I don't think anybody wants to see the full-fledged New Orleans Pelicans. And then Dallas, I know team's going to be excited to play Luka and deal with him for a seven-game series. But then after that, you have Sacramento. Is anybody afraid of Sacramento? I mean, look, they're playing well, but I don't think anybody's afraid of Sacramento. The Clippers, they've lost six in a row. They're probably going to win tonight, but who knows what their availability of Paul George and obviously Kawhi is going to be. The Warriors, yeah, they're going to win their home games, but on the road, they've been historically atrocious. Phoenix, I think, is cooked. Minnesota is not going to be a threat to anybody. Utah beat the Cavs tonight, but I don't think anybody's afraid of Utah, Portland, the Lakers. I mean, I just think that there's a lot of mediocre teams here in the Western Conference that in any given series, any of these teams can beat anybody else. I do think probably as it stands, Denver and Memphis are the two best teams, with New Orleans, if they're healthy, I think being right there. And then you have to say the other teams are a wild card. Dallas, can Luka win you a series or two? Absolutely. Got him to the Western Conference Finals last year. The Clippers, if they're healthy, sure. Golden State, yeah. But there's some weird stuff going on with that team. Who knows why the split between home and away and everything else. Phoenix, I don't think Phoenix is done. So it's just there's a lot of mediocre teams in the West. It feels like the West is sort of the old Eastern Conference, with the exception of, I think you do have the best player on some of these teams is better than some of the old LeBron era Eastern Conference. The best players on those teams weren't nearly as good as some of the best players on these teams when you think
Gilbert
about
Arenas?
Yeah. When you think about Booker, or you think about Kawhi, or you think about Steph or Luka, clearly those players are better than the LeBron era Eastern Conference best players on teams, but it still feels like all these teams are just eh, and none of them get me very excited in terms of the way they've been performing, at least in the regular season. So
they're like Baker Mayfield. Gets you really excited.
Come on, man. Come on, Baker. Can't beat Seattle and try to help out the Detroit Lions, get them into the playoffs.
Baker's listen, I give the
it's killing me from afar, man.
Give the Lions a lot of credit, though. Give Dan Campbell a lot of credit. There you go. We'll just leave it at that. Anyways, I agree. I think the Western Conference teams, I'm not really blown away with any of them. And there's lots of questions. I mean, when you look at it, there's questions for pretty much every team in the Western Conference. Would you agree? Like,
yeah. Oh, for sure. For
like,
sure. I don't
like
think
even the top teams, like
Denver's defense, very average. Memphis, I still think Bane's been really good in his shooting. And Jaren Jackson Jr., obviously, he's having a good offensive season, but he's still
Bane's really good at getting smacked in the head by Jordan Clarkson, too. Yeah.
I don't know. Look, I love Ja, but when your best player is 6'2", 170 pounds.
Soaking wet.
I just think there's ways that teams can scheme and game plan and do things to at least make it really tough for him to win games on his own. And we'll see. Memphis has done it 2 years in a row. They finished second in the West last year, and they're right there at the top this year. And I think people continue to doubt them, so maybe we're wrong. But I'd be surprised if Memphis is the Western Conference representative in the finals. I really would. I think there's too many other teams that are right along that same level that I could see beating Memphis, let's put it that way.
I agree, Mike. All right, anything else in the West you want to talk about, Mike?
Nah, I think we hit everything. I mean, the only other thing would be the Lakers, and we've talked about them so much.
Oh,
I don't know what
God,
they're gonna do.
No,
We're just gonna wait to see what ends up happening. Credit to LeBron. He's carried this garbage roster as he's done in the past. They're 6-4 in their last 10 without AD. Nobody really saw that as being a possibility. So kudos to LeBron. What he's doing is incredible. And it's just a shame that there's not a workable roster around him where he'd have a legitimate chance of at least making some noise in the playoffs. Because this team, he can only carry him so far. And whatever.
This team's worse than the 2018 Cavs, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Much worse. Much worse.
Is this team worse than the 2007 Cavs?
this team right now without AD is worse. You bring AD back and this team's better.
God, I agree. I agree with that.
I agree. Man, those were the days, man. Booby Gibson.
Get yourself some
Eric Snow.
Get some Drew Gooden. Get some Larry Hughes in there.
Eric Snow, baby. Eric Snow.
Yeah, I like Eric Snow. Cam McKinley guy. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, one thing I forgot to bring up during the Cavs talk, and I just want you to – my dad and I had a full-blown argument. Like, I thought he wasn't going to talk to me for, like, 5 minutes – or for, like, five days.
All right. Lay it on me.
He says the Cavs are better without Darius Garland.
What? No, absolutely
they
not.
They have undefeated without Darius Garland. Yeah, and they're now 500 with him. Yeah. Or I think are they one game over with Darius? That's what my dad said. I got into a full blown argument with him. He's like, they just don't know how to play together. And when he's not on the floor, when Mitchell plays, they're just better. They're better without him. I'm like, Dad, like, what are you talking? Like, you can't just look at a record. Like, you can't look at a record, but. I just wanted you to know that once again, it proves that my dad doesn't know basketball very well.
Nah, I think there's no way they're better without Garland. There's no way. Is Garland an all-star this year? You think he makes the all-star
team?
No,
I don't think so. I think he's missed too much. I don't think he is. I think...
It'll be close.
This is crazy. I would have never... I would have never said this, Mike, but I think Mitchell's our only all-star.
Well, if Darius doesn't make it, I don't think Jared. Well, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I would say, look,
I think our Mitchell's our only all star.
I could see Garland making it. I mean, I think there's probably room on the team for Garland. You just go down the list of guys, and
we're going to do this now, Mike.
Let's do it. Let's just do it really quick. There's nobody in the bottom five. Nobody from Detroit. Nobody from Charlotte. LaMelo's missed too many games. Paolo's not making it in front of Garland. Nobody from the Wizards is making it. Bradley Beal's not making it. Toronto has nobody that's going to make it in front of. I guess Siakam's probably going to make the team, right? But nobody else. Van Vliet was an all-star last year. He's not making the team. The Bulls, DeRozan's going to make it, but Levine's missed too many games. Trae Young's obviously going to make it. Lowry's not going to make it. Is Brunson going to be an all-star?
Jimmy Butler is going to be an all-star.
Yeah, is Brunson?
I think Brunson's got a chance.
Maybe he's got a chance, but I don't think you put him in ahead of Garland. Halliburton's clearly going to make it. Is Harden an all-star?
He might be.
I'd say yes. I think he's going to be. Jrue Holiday's missed too many games. Kyrie's going to be an all-star.
Yeah, Mike, I'm telling you, you're running out of spots right now.
I know. It's going to be close is what I'm saying. I mean, he's clearly not a slam dunk guy that's going to make it, but I could see him making it too.
Lucky for you, we can listen to Simmons talk about it because he just put out a podcast for tonight for talking about the Eastern Conference, the five starters and the 10 guys we must have.
Okay, well, we'll have to wait and see what Bill thinks, but we'll probably do that maybe next week because I forget when the next round of voting is going to come out, but...
I'm telling you, he's not making it, Mike. I'm willing to tell you that he's not making it.
All right, let's pull up Garland's stats. Let me pull up Garland's stats real quick. Let's just look at those real quick. So Darius Garland, he is played 32 games. Mitchell's played 36. Garland's averaging 21 a game, 8 assists to 3 turnovers. He's shooting 44% from the field, 39.3% from three, 85% from the line on a team that right now they're fifth, but by the time the reserves are picked, they could be anywhere from probably second to fifth. I think he's got a decent chance to make it. I don't know if he will, but I think he's got a decent shot at making it. Plus, it's always fun to have point guards in the game. So if you're going to choose him or you're going to pick some big man, I'd much rather have Garland in the game. It'd be a lot more fun to have in that game than...
Does Mobley have a shot or no?
No.
His stats are just so low.
I just don't think, he's averaging 14 a game. I mean, he's averaging 14-9. There's no way he's getting in.
Okay.
And Jared Allen's averaging 13-10.
What about Raul Neto?
No. No, Raul Neto is not making the All-Star team.
Okay.
So, although he's been good when he's played, honestly,
He's been like our deli. He's been our deli, Mike.
I enjoy watching him. I enjoy watching him. So he's much better. He's much better than Billy Goodwin and who was the guy
we had last year? I forgot about Billy Goodwin.
Who was the guy? Who was the guy we had last year at the beginning of the year? Who was the little white guy we had at the beginning of the year last year? What was that guy's name? Pangas.
Oh, Pangas.
Kevin Pangas. So, I mean, he's much better than those two guys in this role.
Dude, listen, for sure. I forgot about Billy Goodwin. What's Billy Goodwin doing? What was his real name?
Brandon.
Brandon Goodwin. Let's look this up real quick. We'll do a quick welfare check on Brandon Goodwin. And then
then we're going to say goodbye.
Then we're going to say goodbye. Wait a second. He's on the Cleveland Charge, Mike. He's still a chance.
All right. Wow. All right, well, I guess if an injury, although now with Rubio coming back, I would think that there'd have to be some real injuries going down. But, so Brandon's still a part of the organization. Glad to hear that. Glad to hear it.
So according to Wikipedia, I didn't think he was still on the roster. Like, this is, this is really, really exciting to me, Mike. I got to really see this. I can't believe that he's still on the Cleveland Charge.
Glad to hear it. Now you're gonna have to go follow him.
Oh no! According to Real GM, he is not on the roster. So I don't know what my information. Wikipedia needs to be updated here. So sadly,
we'll find him somewhere. That's
Brandon Goodwin. We don't have a welfare check
staff
for him.
We'll update. We will update the Brandon Goodwin travels around the basketball world. We'll get that updated for next week. So let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for staying up late with us tonight. And even though you'll be listening to this during the day, appreciate everyone. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
The first training camp, Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine, will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.